We have five radio stations under one roof here. This one is 1030. KVOI, The Voice, Tucson's only source for live local news and talk. And we are in the Green Things Zocalo Village studio. Pretty excited about the fact we're have almost 14 full years for our radio program, and we'll begin year 15 the first week in January, and that will mean that I now have been in Tucson broadcasting for 37 years. We'll have our, and we do have our worldwide broadcasting, and you can hear all of our programs live and on podcasts at buckmastershow.com. When we do our telephone interviews, our live line is presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Our media partners, TucsonSentinel.com, Dylan Smith and his team over at the Sentinel, doing a great job. Also doing a great job, the Green Valley News and Saharita Sun, under the leadership of Dan Shear. And of course, the newest addition to our media partners, Tucson Spotlight, Caitlin Schmidt, and her new online news publication. And on Friday, we have a media co-host on the Buckmaster Show. It's Tim Stiller, a stellar award-winning columnist for the Arizona Daily Star. Tim's caught in traffic, so he's on the live line, but he is headed this way to the Bustos Media Complex. Our Friday focus interview is with State Senator J.D. Mesnard, who was reelected in November to a fourth two-year term from District 13, which covers Chandler, Gilbert, and Sun Lakes. He previously served in the House of Representatives for 8 years, including Speaker of the House for 2 years. Senator Mesnard, congratulations on your victory, and you're off and running for another term. How you doing?
I am. Thank you very much. I'm doing well, just gearing up for the holidays like everybody else, and I'm glad to be with you today.
And Tim Stiller, are you there on the live line as well?
Well, you tell me. Can you hear me?
Yeah, I can hear you very well, Tim. And we'll see,
all right,
see you in studio here in a couple of minutes. But let me begin with Senator Mesnard. Everybody's talking about Arizona taking forever to get our election results in. I think we're maybe California was slower. I think it was, but we were right up there. What can we do to turn it around? A lot of people said, let's use the Florida model, which basically means early voting cutoff would be the Friday at midnight or whatever, that Friday before the Tuesday election. Can we do that here in Arizona, Senator?
Yeah, so, and that's actually a common misunderstanding of Florida, in that they don't actually have a hard cutoff of the Friday. After the Friday, it just changes to where you need to go and drop it off at the county directly, as opposed to, you know, putting it in the mail or dropping it off at some other location. So they just centralize the drop off at that point. But it is true that the fundamental reason we take so long to count is because we have hundreds of thousands of voters that take advantage of early voting, but they don't actually mail in their ballot early. They drop it off at the polls on election day. And so we can't even begin counting until we signature verify those envelopes that the ballots are in, which takes days. And so that's the idea behind a cutoff or some sort of change a few days prior, is so that you can avoid that situation from happening.
Didn't we have some kind of legislation that during the last session about this?
So in the last term, so 2 years ago, right after the 2022 election, given how long it took then, and it's been getting longer because we see, or at least we have more and more people dropping off the ballots at the very last moment, I did introduce a bill to try to speed that up. And the case I made is that going into 2024, where we reasoned that Arizona, as it was, would be a battleground state in the presidential election. And I said, you know, God forbid that it comes down to our state, which, you know, thankfully didn't, but it could have come down to our state, and the entire country would be waiting on us to know who our U.S. Senator was, but of course, who the President of the United States was going to be, and that would just be a very bad look. So we got a lot of people criticizing and laughing at us in 2022, but I was concerned about 2024. You know, again, thankfully we didn't have that situation, but the principle is still the same. It takes way too long. We're the laughingstock of the country, and we can fix it, which is what my bill would have done.
Are you going to reintroduce that bill in January?
Yeah, already did. The prior bill was vetoed, unfortunately, by the governor. So some folks are saying, well, this is something the legislature could fix. You know, we tried. We introduced this bill, got it through the legislature. She vetoed it. I have introduced as Senate Bill 1001, the very first bill of the session, the exact same bill that was vetoed as the starting point for what I hope will be productive conversations that lead to a signed bill that speeds up the process.
Could that go to, if the governor decides that to veto it again, could it go to the legislative, could they go through the process to put this on the ballot and let the voters decide whether they want it this way?
We absolutely could. We did that in the last election with the Secure the Border Act that she had vetoed. We knew the people wanted it. We sent it to the ballot. It passed overwhelmingly. So that is an option. It's not ideal, but it is an option if the governor stands in the way of something that we know the vast majority of voters want. We can send it directly to the ballot.
Tim Steller, what do you think about all of this?
Well, what about, how do you deal with this issue? That is, of course, what you said is right. People who have early ballots bring them in on election day, and that's a problem. Are you saying that in this bill, would people be forced, like, say I brought in my early ballot to the polling place, would I be forced then to basically vote a ballot a day of election ballot instead of turning in an early ballot?
No.
What I mean? Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. Sure. The proposal would have said, we're still going to allow you to bring your ballot to the polls and to drop it off on election day. The difference is we're going to treat everybody showing up on election day the same, meaning we are, before you drop your ballot off, we're going to check ID. Then negates the need to signature verify. It establishes sort of equity, you know, for everyone showing up at the polls. And then you can immediately count the ballot, whether you do it on the spot or take it to a central count, you know, that's down the road.
Got it. And so the idea would be, I mean, to what extent would this be a solution then? Because my understanding is that it's also a volume thing of ballots coming in, even people who aren't in this situation coming in relatively late, and that taking time for signature verification, even if the ballot comes in before Election Day. Is that right? And would you solve that?
So if you recall back before, it's been a while, but back before we did mail-in voting to the extent that we do today, everybody, a far larger number, were casting ballots on Election Day, and the vast, vast majority were being counted on Election Day. So we're still talking about a smaller number doing it this way. The key is whether or not you can immediately feed it into the machine and count it, or have to do some other process. This negates that other process.
Mm-hmm. There were all sorts of, as we widely reported, the claims of fraud in the last election. What about this one? Do you think this was fairly well run, Senator Messner, this election?
You know, I can speak from my personal experience. I went in and voted on election day, didn't have any issue. There wasn't even a line where I went. I checked the county Maricopa recorder's website to see where there wouldn't be one. Walked in, showed my ID. They printed my ballot. There weren't any printer issues either, so that was a relief. I filled it out, put it in the machine, didn't see any issues, didn't really hear too many. You know, some were disappointed, maybe in a particular race, and human nature is you start to wonder, you make accusations. But for the most part, I didn't hear anything that rose to the level that we heard about in 2022 or 2020.
You are you still the chair of the Finance and Commerce Committee, or you're going to have all those chairmanships are going to have to be voted on?
They're not voted on. That's the purview of the president. He did name me the chairman of the Finance Committee, so that's what I will be chairing again this next term.
Let's talk a little bit about the makeup of the 2025 legislative session. When all is said and done, what do we have? How many Republicans and how many Democrats?
So we have in the House 33 Republicans, which is a gain of 2 for the Republicans, to 27 Democrats, 60 total. So 33-27. The Senate, the Republicans gained 1, going from 16 to 17. The Democrats are at 13. So 17 to 13 out of the 30.
Okay, Tim Steller has joined me in studio. The traffic out there must be crazy for the holidays or something.
It comes and goes. It usually arrives just when I'm out on the road.
Just when you hit the road. But good to have Tim Steller, award-winning columnist for the Arizona Daily Star, with me in studio. Tim, let's turn it over. You pick it up with Senator Mesnard.
Well, what are your other top priorities for this session, Senator Mesnard?
Yes. Yeah, I appreciate that question. So one thing that I worked pretty hard on the last session that we're sort of picking up where we left off is on a possible Prop 123 renewal. For those that aren't familiar, you know, it's been 10 years since we went to the voters to increase the distribution from the state trust land fund that largely goes to K-12 schools. And so that will expire, that higher distribution will expire at the end of the fiscal year, so in about 6 months or so. We've been working on the possibility of extending that, which would require another vote of people. But it's a pretty tricky process and lots of feelings about what should or shouldn't be in such a proposal. So we're working on that, and I'm hoping that we can get it to the ballot. What it would do is increase average teacher pay by about $4,000 is what our estimates are. So it's a way to get more to our classroom teachers. But obviously, we got to get it through the legislature, which just had a change in makeup. So that set us back a little bit.
So would you consider, apparently you consider Prop 123 to have been a success. Certainly there was a lot of doubts about taking money from the state land trust back then. But now we have 10 years of experience, as you say. So Obviously you think it's been successful.
Yeah. So one of the uncertainties was, you know, we had a much smaller payout, 2% and some, and the what we call the corpus of the fund was growing rapidly because clearly the rates of return, you know, the investments were far higher than the payouts each year. And so that was just going to continue to amass. We wanted to get more to our schools. There was also a lawsuit at the time, not to go too into the weeds, but there was a lot that motivated this. So one of the points of contention was how much do you increase it? We came up with a rate that we felt was safe, but also put in safeguards in case it underperformed. And like you said, we have 10 years to see that. In fact, the corpus still grew, so even though we had a higher payout. It still grew, certainly by less than it did before, but it's clearly been a success, and we want to just replicate that again.
Speaking of schools, state auditors presented a report, Senator Mesnard, to you and your fellow lawmakers this week. That report found only 4 of the 47 schools that were checked at random could demonstrate that they conducted all the required lockdown-type drills. Surely school safety is going to come up during this legislative session. What's your take on it?
So I haven't read through the entire report yet, but this is why we have an auditor. They check performance. They check the financials of school districts and other public entities for this reason, so that we can see what's going on. Obviously, it was an alarming report. The school districts will respond to it, and usually the response is, "Hey, we're gonna fix the problem." But no doubt there'll be some discussions. I am also sitting on the education committee. I suspect this will be of interest to the incoming education chairman to figure out what's going on. But hopefully, the schools will take note of this, and maybe we'll do a deeper dive as well to see if this was an outlier. We just, you know, sort of the random choice of schools worked out such that they weren't performing well and others are, or maybe this is a trend we got to fix.
Is school safety a local issue with the school boards, or does the state have a role there?
Mostly it's how they go about conducting themselves on almost anything as a local decision. We do set parameters in certain cases in statute or through the State Board of Education that they have to follow, but they do have a lot of discretion, almost total discretion, in how they allocate funds. And that's why we audit them, so that we can sort of see how they're doing and also compare districts one to another, so that we can learn from what's working as well as what's not working.
All right, let's pause right here with State Senator J.D. Mesnard on the live line from Chandler. He was newly reelected to another two-year term, Republican up in the Valley of the Sun. Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. About this time, Tim Steller, probably you could go for a cup of coffee and something sweet, couldn't you?
Yeah, I could, except that has been kind of constant for the last week or so.
You've had that sweet tooth.
I need to have maybe a fast for till tomorrow morning.
There you go. That, yeah. Mona's Northeast Corner, Swan and Sunrise. Getting ready for the holidays, the countdown to Christmas, 12 days. We're 12 days away from the big day. Mona'sDanishBakery.com. You can put your order in for your dinner rolls, for your Christmas table, and all of your sweet stuff. All the pies and whatever on the Christmas Eve or Christmas Day table. Northeast Corner, Swan and Sunrise, Mona's Danish Bakery, home of the Danish Kringle. We'll have more talking about the upcoming 2025 legislative session with State Senator J.D. Mesnard. He's on our live line, presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. And with me in the Green Things Zocalo Village Studios, Tim Steller of the Arizona Daily Star. We'll be right back. Family-owned Jam Culinary Concepts and its family of restaurants has you covered for your special event. Jam caters anytime, anywhere, any size group, and any type of cuisine. Vero Amore, authentic Neapolitan pizza, and Noble Hops. Craft beer and fine fare are synonymous with quality. Call 954-1468 or log on to jamculinaryconcepts.com. Family-owned and run since 1985, Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing is the gold standard for quality and professionalism for picture framing, custom frame mirrors, art for your walls, and hanging and lighting solutions. Come in for your design session or set it up electronically. Moe's Gallery and Fine Framing, Fort Lowell and Dodge, and now doing e-commerce at moesgallery.com.
Take the Regional Transportation Authority's brief survey of its draft $2.46 billion Regional Transportation Plan. The 20-year RTA Next Draft Plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, and environmental improvements for the greater Tucson region. The RTA Board will consider your feedback before it prepares a final draft for voter consideration as early as November 2025. We invite you to take our brief survey at rtanext.com.
Hi, this is Irene Coppola, President and CEO of the Better Business Bureau serving Southern Arizona. The BBB sets the standards for marketplace trust by engaging with and educating consumers and businesses. The BBB is the resource to turn to for the objective, unbiased information on businesses offering national and local consumer services online and in person. Learn more about the many services offered by the Better Business Bureau at bbb.org.
Are you happy with the news you get? While not all news is good news, you know good reporting when you see it. Check TucsonSentinel.com every day for breaking news and investigative reports. Have your say in the comments. It's all in TucsonSentinel.com, your local, independent, nonprofit news. You can rely on TucsonSentinel.com for solid reporting about immigration, Tucson and penal politics, everything from the border to baseball. It's independent news without the spin. TucsonSentinel.com. We are watching Tucson.
The nonprofit Tucson Wildlife Center has been helping injured, sick, and orphan wildlife in southern Arizona since 1999. They're dedicated to the rescue, medical care, and rehabilitation of sick, injured, and orphan wildlife, with the goal of releasing them back to their natural habitat. Around 5,000 animals a year come to them, as they are the only wildlife rescue in southern Arizona. All made possible through donations. They receive no government funding. Please donate at TucsonWildlife.com.
Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show and the Green Thing, Zocalo Village Studio on the campus of Bustos Media, where we've got five radio stations now under one roof. This one's 1030 KVOI, Tucson's Voice. Tim Steller is with me. He's my media co-host. We do that on Fridays, and Tim is the award-winning columnist for the Arizona Daily Star, our Friday Focus interview on our live line presented by Rincon Ventures Real Estate and Property Management. Is state senator, newly elected state senator to another two-year term, Republican J.D. Mesnard from the Chandler area. Let's talk water. Is it time, Senator, to revisit the 1980 groundwater rules that were set in this state, which basically give rural areas kind of the free rein to do as much pumping as they need to? Do we need to revisit that?
Well, certainly the water issue continues to dominate discussions today. It's very complicated, not only because it deals with our internal stakeholders and constituencies like the rural-urban balance, but also other states. So it's very complicated. When Governor Ducey was governor, he made some headway there. We're going to have to continue those conversations to see if we can reach some kind of agreement. But it is difficult, no doubt about it.
Isn't it true that for some years, most groundwater legislation that's been introduced has been killed in whatever committee it is, whether in the Senate or the House, that a certain representative from Southern Arizona, Gail Griffin, heads? Republicans have complained a lot about this, is that even their most well-considered bills just go into the circular file when they reach her committee. So how do you make any progress if that's the situation?
Well, I've always felt that Ms. Griffin is willing to have conversations, has an open door on just about any policy. I've not specifically approached her on water policy. There's no doubt there's a lot of deference to her expertise, her experience on the issue, and she's going to come at it from a certain perspective. And she's not the only one. We've had other legislators involved. Senator Kerr, who just termed out of office, was looked to in a similar way on the Senate side. But yeah, there are certain folks who have spent a lot of time on this subject, and those of us that don't have as much expertise, who have a constituency that's a little more removed from what she's facing, we do look to her for her input. And then as the chair of the committee, yeah, she's kind of the gatekeeper, and that's a decision made by leadership at the end of the day.
So is that, I mean, the thing is that there have been Republican senators and representatives who have, pushed this issue, done their significant research and such, and proposed, like Sonny Borelli, for example, Leo Biasucci, others in the past. And I don't know, it strikes me that it's like not, in some way not fair that the expertise of one is placed over the expertise that has been gained by many others. Like Regina Cobb, that was the other one I was trying to think of, from Kingman, who developed a lot of policies over the years that went in the circular file.
And so you mentioned three legislators all coming from the same district, same general area of the state, the northwest part of the state. And they're going to have their specific, view up there. I've not heard from them that they felt excluded. There have been some points of disagreement, I don't think they were just between the three of them at different times and Senator or now Representative Griffin. I think it's been more than that. So this is not my area of expertise, admittedly. But again, I've not felt like anyone was being closed off to other members and their concerns.
All right, let's go to the live line. Caller Matt would like to speak with Senator Mesnard. Go ahead, Matt.
Yes, thank you, Senator Mesnard, for doing the show. Proposition 312, I gather a lot of the cities and counties, municipalities and the county governments are sitting back right now trying to figure out what it's going to mean to them. Is there, what is the adjudication process? It's a once-a-year refund. If property owners have violations they can document, what do you expect from it, and are you hearing anything from the League of Cities and Towns or any other organization? Thank you. Bye.
We should probably summarize here that Prop 312 is the initiative that was passed, or I'm sorry, it was a referral, wasn't it, that allows property taxpayers to recoup money that they spend in order to fend off problems from homeless people or addicted people or what have you, damaging or otherwise threatening their property, I think.
Okay, thank you for that. Tim, go ahead, Senator.
Yeah, so, and sometimes we have to wait to see if this is something the voters want to adopt. We kind of put the outlines in place, and then if it's passed by the voters, we've got to come back and fill in some of the details. The referral to the ballot that became Prop 312, I think it was HCR 2023 from earlier this year. I mean, it had some of those details in, but there's no doubt that when you start to implement a new plan, something like this, that sort of started as a concept based on frustration of cities not doing what they should have been doing, and they were opposed to this, but the voters were not. So we're going to have to spend some time putting together something that will work. I'm optimistic we can do that with my colleagues this year.
I want to talk a little bit more about some of these propositions that have passed. The border initiative passing, how do you see that all playing out?
Yeah, that was a comprehensive bill that dealt with a lot of different aspects of the border, everything from fentanyl to obviously crossing illegally from something other than a legal port of entry. And what it did was create a parallel state crime for what really already exists at the federal level when it comes to crossing illegally. So that will empower us as a state to step in when the feds don't do what they should be doing. I'm optimistic the incoming administration will be a little more proactive at border security than the current one, but it will at least be another tool in the tool belt for us as a state. Now, there is litigation on this because Texas passed something that was similar in certain respects. It's being litigated, so it's a bit contingent on that litigation working out. But like I said, I'm glad that, assuming it works out, we'll have this in the toolbox as a state. And I'm also optimistic that the feds are going to get their act together in the near future.
What about the abortion rights situation? That is, we passed this constitutional amendment just this election, which obviously conflicts with the 15-week ban that was on the books. What needs to happen, or what do you expect to happen now in the legislature as far as making sure we have one consistent law? Like, do you have to do something with the 15-week ban now, or what?
I suspect that most of what will happen is going to happen through litigation and court interpretation. Prop 139 was sold as sort of this very simple, we're going to create this constitutional right to abortion, established theoretically a viability line, although that has lots of loopholes in it. I think the first lawsuits have already been filed, and we've seen a similar pattern in other states by proponents who wanted the ballot than filing a lawsuit. I think that's probably how this is going to go. And then we don't know how many of the various laws we have. I mean, because it's not all the 15 weeks.
Yeah.
You have, parental notification laws, other laws like that on the books that are now potentially vulnerable, but I suspect will be subject to litigation as well.
And also probably anything that the Republican-led legislature passes would be on this score would probably be vetoed by the governor, right? That's the experience.
Right. I think at this point there's a disagreement between the two sides. And so that's why another reason why litigation is likely to be what we see as the major mode of making any changes to the statutes we currently have on the books as a result of Prop 139.
You are a numbers guy, Senator Mesnard. Give us the overview. What kind of financial shape is the state of Arizona in as we transition to 2025?
And yeah, we'll get the next major update here about 2 weeks into January. But for the moment, you know, we're looking better than last year. So for a little historical context, we went through a really good year about 2 years ago during Hobbs's first term, or first year of her governorship, where we had surpluses that we utilized. And then this last year, as cycles in the economy go up and down, we face some of the downside and had to rein in some spending and tighten our belt. Currently, the way it's looking is I would say it's kind of a break-even-ish scenario. So better than we were last year. It's not like we have a large surplus or a deficit. We'll see, of course, where the revenues from, you know, this holiday seasons, the sales tax revenues, et cetera, how they look come January, but I'm hoping it's sort of a status quo type of year, which will be an improvement over the last.
Can we afford the school vouchers?
Certainly. I mean, I obviously folks have raised the issue as impacting the general fund, which is true, but the program itself is limiting in terms of the dollars that go out to schools. And so from a taxpayer perspective, when you're looking at not just the state funds, but property taxes, et cetera, it's a savings to the taxpayer. But more importantly, and why I support it, is it's blown the gates wide open for options for parents. And as a parent of young kids, my oldest just entered kindergarten. We spent time, you know, looking for what we thought would be the right school for her, and it was exciting to have all those choices in front of us. So yes, there's a general fund impact, but I think it's a small price to pay, and then the taxpayer on the whole is benefiting from the program.
Accountability, though, has been the big knock on that program, Senator Mesnard.
There have been folks who say they want more accountability, and I'm very open to conversations about, you know, whether or not, I think there was an article recently, you know, somebody spent a chunk of money on a very expensive musical instrument or something. And we can get into whether or not, you know, what's the appropriate use of school funds. I do think some of the folks who bring up accountability, though, aren't necessarily coming at it from a "we want this program to succeed" motivation. I think a lot of them just don't like it and want to try to undermine it, which makes it hard to have a real conversation about it. But I'm open to it. I want the program to succeed. And there have been a few bad apples out there that everyone focuses on, just like there are bad apples in the traditional school system, too. But I'm happy to have those conversations.
Just got a message from a listener. Please ask the senator, how is paying for a private school a savings for taxpayers?
Yeah, so right now, if you add up all the sources of taxpayer money that go to funding a child's education, so that's going to be local, you know, property taxes, it's going to be the state, and even the federal, you're at like $13,000-ish per student. There's some variation from district to district for a variety of reasons, too complex to go into, but it's like $13,000 to $14,000. Whereas the ESA, which is what they call the voucher program, it's only based on a portion of that. And so it's, I think, average is about $7,000 per student. So just the pure math of it is that the amount that's going to a student in an ESA from a taxpayer perspective is less. I mean, that is a mathematical fact. It is true that the general fund portion may be higher, as it is, like, say, with charter school funding, but it is definitely less than what per pupil districts are getting.
All right, here's Tim Steller.
Senator, it'll be, I think, your third session with Katie Hobbs as governor, and those previous sessions have been marked by dozens and dozens and dozens of vetoes. What do you think is going to happen this year? That is there any different dynamic between the Republican majority and the Democratic governor, or is it just going to be more or less the same kind of thing?
So that's a really good question. You know, her first year, I think we had 140 some vetoes, which was almost triple the prior record. It was pretty shocking. We had fewer vetoes last year, but only by comparison. It would have been a record in its own right, and I think she's closing in on, you know, 200, 250 vetoes. Will it be different? Honestly, I'm not sure, because now the dynamic is that going into 2026, she's going to be on the ballot, and there's going to be an interest in sort of outlining where there are differences of opinion for the voters to then make a decision on. So could you see some vetoes? You could. I mean, if we send my bill up on election, speeding up the election results, she sort of indicated she would veto it. I'm hoping to try to persuade her differently. But so, yeah, all we can do is pass what we think are good policies. I'm happy to work with her. I'm not trying to earn a veto. But also we need to show our constituents what we think is a good policy. And if she disagrees, she vetoes. And then the voters will ultimately render their judgment in 2026.
So on something like that election bill that we discussed earlier, it's not that you like go to her office and say, hey, we're going to pass this bill, or I'm going to float this bill and I think we'll pass it. I really would like your support. You don't go in advance and try to set up support for that, do you? Well, from the governor, right?
Do I try to?
Do you go to the governor's office and say, hey, I want this bill to pass. I really like your support. You know, that's however you work these deals. Do you do that in advance?
Yes, I did that. I did that last time. Last time I reached out to them, I actually didn't really hear back until the veto, unfortunately. Like, we had to keep the bills moving, but I reached out to her office and asked, hey, what do you think about this? Like, we should all be on the same page that having speedier results is not just what the public wants, but it's good for their trust. It's good for the system. And we have a collective interest in not being the laughingstock of the country in 2024. I didn't get much feedback. And then the veto letter itself was like a one sentence, nothing burger. Like there wasn't even like some takeaways I could run with to try to improve the bill or make changes that would satisfy her this year. So I don't have much to go on, but no, I'm not itching for a veto. I would really like a solution. My door, I think her office would agree. My door is open to them, as it is to, you know, anyone who wants to be, to have productive conversations in the legislative process.
Anything we have not covered? Talked about water, elections. What else is on your mind here as we wrap things up, Senator?
You know, you talked about some of the highlights for sure. As the chairman of the Finance Committee, you're right. I'm a numbers guy, and not everybody out there gets into or likes, you know, tax policy and that sort of thing. But I'll be running some bills that are aimed at trying to improve our tax environment. I'll mention one. And that is, we have a double taxation system in Arizona when it comes to small businesses, where we assess a what's called a business personal property tax. So when they buy a piece of equipment, we assess a property tax on it, even though we've already charged them sales tax for buying it. So they pay for it every year they hold the piece of equipment. So I'm going to look at increasing the exemption amount. And right now it's a very small amount that it's exempted from that tax. Which would be a huge help to small businesses. It's something I've worked on for a few years. Last year, with the budget being the way it was, not much we could do with that. But I'm hopeful that this year we might be able to move the ball down the field.
All right, Senator Mesnard, thank you for spending some time with us. Hope you have a wonderful holiday season. How is your new family doing?
Good. Well, we got a 5-year-old, almost 3-year-old, and just turned one. So, yeah, living the organized chaos here in the Mesnard household, but looking forward to celebrating with these young ones going in the holidays.
Santa is coming to your house very soon. Thank you, Senator. Hope you have a great holiday. Thanks.
You too. Thanks.
All right. Senator J.D. Mesnard with us on our Friday Focus interview on the Buckmaster Show. Let's take a break. Then I'm going to spend a few minutes with Tim Stellar right after this.
Dine in or take out authentic Neapolitan wood-fired pizza at Vero Amore, where every flavorful pizza, pasta, and panini are homemade using the finest local and imported ingredients. Vero Amore, Plaza Palomino at Swan and Fort Lowell, and on Dove Mountain in Marana, plus a full catering menu and mobile pizza truck for parties and events. Vero Amore, on the web at veroamorepizza.com.
The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun cover two of Arizona's most desirable communities. The News and Sun's media reach 75% of the region through newspapers, websites, social media, video, newsletters, and more. They also produce more than a dozen print and digital magazines annually for an audience of 70,000. Find them at gvnews.com. The Green Valley News and Sarita's Sun, covering your hometown.
Cushman & Wakefield Picor is Tucson's leading independently owned full-service commercial real estate company. Founded in 1985, Cushman & Wakefield Picor offers leasing, sales, and property management for industrial, office, medical, retail, land, and investment properties in Tucson and Sonora, Mexico. Visit our website at picor.com for the latest news from Tucson's commercial real estate sector. That's picor.com. Call us at 748-7100.
Are you ready to immerse yourself in a diverse culture while wandering through bustling markets, sampling exotic cuisines, or forging connections with people from all walks of life? Well, Bon Voyage Travel is here to plan your perfect journey. Whether you're setting off on a solo expedition, embarking on a group adventure, or simply dreaming of far-off destinations, we can help create your custom experience. The road ahead is filled with endless possibilities. Visit bvtravel.com to find your specialized Bon Voyage Travel advisor today.
For more than a half century, Tucson Gardeners Trust Green Things, a family-owned and operated retail and wholesale plant nursery, offering an amazing variety of plants, trees, cacti, pottery, and so much more, all at great prices. The 13.5-acre site by the Rito River is also home to the Zocalo Village, specializing in fine Mexican and Latin American imported furniture and art. Green Things open daily at 3384 East River Road and at greenthingsaz.com and zocalovillage.com.
Buckmaster Show listeners know that I'm passionate about travel. When I'm ready to take off on a new adventure, my air travel begins and ends at Tucson International Airport. TUS is nonstop for our community and Southern Arizona. So remember, to fly local, fly Tucson. Tucson International is nonstop for Tucson. More at flytucson.com. Welcome back. It is the Buckmaster Show. Where does time go during our program? Goes so darn fast is where it goes. Thanks to J.D. Mesnard, state senator, newly elected. Tim Steller's with me from the Arizona Daily Star. Let's pick up a little bit on that column that you wrote last Sunday, and the senator talked a little bit about border enforcement, and of course everybody's wondering what's going to happen with roundups and all of that. What's your take on, what are you hearing?
Well, we have a guest opinion running this weekend from Adelita Grijalva, the chair of the Pima County Board of Supervisors, Mayor Regina Romero of Tucson, Pima County Attorney Laura Conover, and the newly reelected Sheriff Chris Nanos.
Who you have not always agreed with.
Yeah, I wrote a couple columns criticizing his tenure, and I do think there have been some significant problems with how he's run the office. However, as I wrote last weekend, I do think there is a silver lining in that with Donald Trump in office, a sheriff is in a good position to be a check on any overreach that the president may seek to have on local law enforcement, especially in the area of immigration enforcement, which is what these four are writing the op-ed about this Sunday. But there are other areas where the federal government may call on the local law enforcement to help out in this or that. I spoke to an author, an expert, who was suggesting, for example, in crackdowns on protests, which have been a significant priority for some members of the right side of the political spectrum. So, you know, in that sense, for me, it's good to have a greater check on federal power in that office.
So the sheriff of Santa Cruz County and the sheriff of Pima County are kind of outliers among the sheriffs in the state as far as saying they will not cooperate with roundups.
Yeah, I can't go through every single one of the 15 sheriffs, but certainly along
the
border.
I mean, there may be another one, but generally it's those two.
Yeah, I mean, actually the new sheriff of Maricopa County has also, even though he's a Republican mm-hmm. and I believe a former Arpaio sidekick, he has expressed some reservations about how much they can do if mm-hmm. they're asked to do anything regarding immigration. I mean, there's both a practical and a principled part of this. The practical part is almost every law enforcement agency is strapped for personnel. And so if they're asked to do something outside of their normal duties, that's leaving some public safety priority undone. Mm-hmm. And this is different from the idea of like standing in the door barring a federal officer from grabbing someone who's deportable. I don't know of anyone who's talking about doing that. It's more about if they are asked to help, what will they do? And the likelihood is little or nothing in Pima County. Unless I say, I imagine in certain scenarios that could be considered public safety risks, you know, like direct ones, not just theoretical ones, I can imagine them getting involved.
All right, just about out of time. Do you want to preview what you've got in the paper this Sunday?
Oh, sure. I've been changing. I've changed three times my topics, but this morning I had a really...
There may be a fourth change after the show here.
I don't think so. This morning I had a really good interview walking around the Presidio neighborhood with Melanie Martinez, who wrote a book called The Molino about her time growing up in El Rapido Mexican Food, that restaurant there on Washington across from the Old Town Artisans building. And we had a really interesting conversation. It made me want to accelerate the writing. And it's about the neighborhoods, neighborhood change, and that sort of thing. And so I'll be writing about that for this Sunday's paper.
What about the column that series? You had a lot of response on that, didn't you?
Yeah, I mean, that series called...
Can you quickly summarize
it? Sure.
Yeah.
It was called Twisted Message, and it's about the followers, the religious sect known as The Message, which essentially is a Christian sect that considers a 20th century religious leader William Branham to be a prophet. Mm-hmm. He happened to live in Tucson the last few years of his life, and as a result, there's a decent concentration of people here who are part of that sect. And the problem is that in some of the churches, some of the congregations that follow him, there are tendencies to become cult-like or controlling, damaging in the way the congregations operate. And then, so we documented a lot of that.
There somewhere it's going to be available, the whole thing, or...
I mean, it's available online. Okay. You could just Google Twisted Message and you can pull up our landing page with all the stories. Also, you can go to our store and buy at Tucson.com and buy paper copies still.
Okay, Tim Stiller, I hope you have a great holiday. And thanks for all your support through the year to our program here, including you're becoming quite the guest host.
Well, you're welcome.
Getting better every time you're over here on this side of the table.
Yep.
So I better worry about that. No. Thanks, Tim. Have a great Christmas.
Thank you.
Okay,
take care,
thanks
though.
A lot. Let's have Weekend Watch in the wings right after this.
Noble Hops is Tucson's original gastropub, serving an ever-changing menu of craft beer and fine fare. Savor the majestic mountain views from the perfect for any season spacious patio at West Lambert Lane and North La Cañada Drive in Oro Valley. Order in or take out at Noble Hops, a pub for foodies. On the web at noblehops.com. You can now review and comment on the Regional Transportation Authority's draft $2.46 billion Regional Transportation Plan at one of several upcoming RTA Next open houses. The draft 20-year plan includes roadway, transit, safety, bicycle, pedestrian, and environmental improvements for the greater Tucson region. It's your plan. Tell us what you think. Learn more and find dates for an upcoming open house near you at rtanext.com.
The Friends of Pima Animal Care Center is the nonprofit partner to our Pima County Animal Shelter. We grant critically needed resources to PACC so that it can continue the amazing life-saving progress it has made in recent years. Your generosity helps us find homes for abused, neglected, and abandoned animals at PAC. Learn how you can help at friendsofpacc.org.
At Tucson International Airport, we are nonstop for our community. Our main priorities are providing a safe and secure travel experience and excellent customer service. We're also nonstop for landing prosperity in Southern Arizona by attracting new flights for business travel and family getaways. When your airport thrives, our community thrives. So fly local, fly TUS. Tucson International Airport is nonstop for Tucson.
Nestled in the foothills of the Santa Rita Mountains of southeastern Arizona is Equine Voices and Sanctuary. Home to horses and burros that were rescued from neglect, abuse, abandonment, and slaughter. Please consider Equine Voices Rescue and Sanctuary with a financial gift of support and estate remembrance. Learn more about our vision and values at equinevoices.org.
This is Bill Buckmaster urging my listeners to join me in becoming a member of the Reed Park Zoo, one of America's top zoos and home to more than 300 animals from all over the world. When you become a zoo member, you receive free daytime admission, discounts on special events and education programs, and so much more. Find out more about zoo membership and everything you need to know about your zoo visit, reedparkzoo.org. It is time for Weekend Watch. Time for Weekend Watch with 101.7 The Drive, presented by our friends in Silver City in Grant County, New Mexico. Lots of folks have time off over the holidays. May I suggest a road trip? Jump in the car, the truck, hop on the motorcycle, head 3 hours over to a lovely area of New Mexico, Silver City and Grant County. You can start your planning, and I hope you do, by visiting southwestnewmexico.org. All sorts of great information about all their activities, a lot of outdoor activities, and some good eating, too, in historic downtown Silver City. Joining me in studio, Leslie Lois is with us, one of the wonderful broadcasters from 101.7 The Drive, and Leslie's got some great ideas for the Buckmaster Show listeners about stuff to do, fun stuff, as the holidays quickly close in on us. Leslie, what's going on?
Well, one of the big ones starts today, I think it started at 10 a.m., is the 4th Avenue Street Fair
It's come around again.
Yes. Oh, man, it is great. If you're looking for gifts, unique gifts, I think it's one of the best places to people watch ever.
Kind of a signature Tucson event.
It really is. Yeah. And that's going on today, 10 to 5. Tomorrow, also 10 to 5. And then Sunday, 10 to 4. It's going to be busy around that area because also tomorrow night, which I'm really excited about, is the Downtown Parade of Lights.
Oh, a lot of folks are excited about that one.
The weather looks beautiful for it, too. Now, this year, it is a different route because there's so much construction going on by the TEP building. It starts at 6:30. Of course, it is free to attend. So it's going to start on 17th Street and 4th Avenue. It goes north on 4th, and then it'll turn west on 12th Street, and then turns onto 6th Avenue to wrap it up.
And the 101.7 will have a presence there?
Our own Ken Carr is going to be emceeing the event.
Great.
And then I am actually walking in the parade.
Oh, very cool.
Yes, with the VW Beetle we gave away a couple
weeks
ago.
You might have a Santa hat on for
that. I am
going to
have some kind of, I am going to be decked out in Santa and holiday gear.
Regalia, yeah. Okay, Leslie, I could take one more quick one.
Okay, Winter Haven Festival of Lights opens up tomorrow.
Another signature event.
Yep, 6 to 10 from tomorrow through the 28th. There are no drive-through nights. So everyone just walk and bring a donation for the community food bank.
Boy, there's a lot going on
there
this weekend.
Is.
Wow. All right, Leslie, Lois, we will look for your work on 101.7 The Drive. We love The Drive. Thank you, Leslie.
Thank you.
All right, The Buckmaster Show is a presentation of Bill Buckmaster Communications, LLC, which is wholly responsible for the content of our program. Theme music composed by our German friend, Christophan, thanks to my assistant, Rose Brandt, Tom Fairbanks and the entire team at KVOI and Bustos Media Tucson, wishing everybody well. Have a great weekend as we quickly approach the Christmas season. Have a good one.